Life Management Science Labs would like to acknowledge that we live and produce this podcast on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. We'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands of our listeners and our international colleagues. We'd like to pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hi, and welcome to Self-Improvement Atlas, the Personal Science Insights podcast produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. We are champions of life management science, providing structured insights informed by science and inspired by practice on key aspects of conscious living. Each week, we bring you scientific and practical insights on each element with the expert knowledge of professionals in the field. I'm Marie Stella, your host from Melbourne, Australia. Let's start the show. Welcome back to the show. Building a healthy relationship with food often takes a lot of trial and error. Sometimes it feels cyclical with all the societal and cultural pressure that popularizes diet culture. But in recent years, an anti-diet approach, intuitive eating, has been making waves. And today we'll be learning all about how beneficial this approach can be, not just for our bodies, but also our minds. And to guide us through this is Dr. Gia Marson, a licensed psychologist and president of her own psychological corporation, Dr. Gia Marson Incorporated. Hi, Gia. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing really well, Marie. How are you?
Fine, thank you. It's great to hear you're doing well, and thank you so much for joining us on the show all the way from LA. We know that it's evening time or nighttime where you are.
Yeah, it really, you see, fine, man. It is night.
Now, I'd love to know, and I'm sure our audience would love to as well, what is it that sparked your interest and passion in healthier eating?
Well, initially when I was in graduate school, I had a couple of distant family members develop eating disorders, actually, and I didn't know anything about them. So I started researching them because I have a big, crazy, huge family. Everybody's in everybody's business in a great way. So I wanted to understand what they needed and how I could be supportive. And so I just started researching it, and I kind of fell in love with the field. And the more I got into it, the more I studied it, the more I did papers on it and did some practicum and externships. I really fell in love with not only the field of eating disorders, but the people who actually have eating disorders and their sensitivities and just how amazing they are. And it kind of just over time took hold, and that's been my whole career so far. So
that is such a sweet story. I love hearing about how academics and scientists and people in those sorts of fields, they spark their interest in it by someone that was close to them or something just really heartfelt. And it's always really, really sweet to hear. And it's also a great introduction to our topic for today. But before we get further into detail, we'd like to get to know you better. This is Have You Met Dr. Gia Marson? My first question for you is, what do you like to do in your spare time?
Well, interestingly, I'm really a people person. So in my spare time, I like to spend time with people. I travel, but I mostly travel to see people. I have family in different parts of the country, and so I like to travel to see them or spend time with the people here that I can't spend time with when I'm working. So mostly I'm a people person.
That's so what I do. Sweet. Yeah. Is there a favorite part of the country that you've traveled to?
Well, I love Los Angeles, really, which is where I am now and where I live. I grew up on the East Coast in New Jersey and spent a lot of time there in adulthood also. But Los Angeles and Malibu, where I went to college and where my private practice is, where my business is my favorite place. I love the smells, the sound of the ocean, the laid-back culture. It's also very, there's a big emphasis on nature and on health there. So I think that has had also an influence in my career.
Is taking weekend trips into nature something that you enjoy doing?
I love being in nature. I do take weekend trips, but more than that, I go on walks at the beach often on the weekends, and that just clears my head. Sometimes I'll get on a phone call. Sometimes I'll listen to music. Sometimes I'll go with somebody, walk my dog. But often I just go by myself, and I just love looking. There's something for me so therapeutic about looking at moving water and the big expanse of a sky, that it just makes me feel calm and safe, and like I could imagine anything is possible. Yeah,
for sure. It sounds really tranquil and serene, and I totally relate to that as well. I feel like at any time I'm at the water, at like a large body of water and just looking at it, or anytime I'm in a towering forest or something like that, it just reminds you how big the world is and how much else is out there. It also makes you feel a bit like, okay, so your actions have a little less weight than you think it does, and so it gives you a little bit less anxiety, takes some of that weight off your shoulders a little bit, you know, just looking at the nature. So that's amazing. Do you ever read any books on your nature trips?
I do. I love to read. I often end up reading psychology books because there's so many parts of psychology I love, not just the field part I'm in, and working with eating, healthy eating and eating disorders. It's kind of like you have to know a little bit about everything or a lot about a few other things, especially anxiety, depression, relationships, those kinds of things that impact almost everybody. And so, you know, you really need to be able to help people with those things. And so I find that the people that I work with, whether it's people who are reading my books or taking a course with me or my clients, they're really smart and they're reading these books. So if they're like, hey, have you read the latest book on habits? And I haven't read it, I'm going to go read it. You know, hopefully I have read it, at least some of it. But so I like to just kind of keep up with what's coming out.
That's an amazing attitude to have. And what are some of your favorite interests in psychology?
I really like the study of optimism, because it is something people really can train themselves to have more of. And it's not like asking someone to get over depression or to recover from an addiction or something like that. It's bigger, but it has a huge reach in someone's life if you can move them just a little bit more toward optimism and hope, because that turns out to be really helpful for motivation and health and goal achievement, things like that. So I really love the idea of being able to help people become a little bit more optimistic.
That's really interesting. I never realized that optimism was such a significant topic in psychology at all. But aside from that, do you listen to any podcasts or watch any films?
I do. I love, my favorite podcast is The Huberman Lab. I don't know if you've listened to it, but he's a professor at Stanford and he talks about all kinds of interesting neuroscience and some kind of pop psychology things. The latest one I listened to was about journaling, and it's a journaling practice that psychologists know a lot about and psychiatrists, but most people don't. And it's where you write about something that's just been distressing for you for 4 days in a row or 4 days in a month. You just sit down and you write all your thoughts and feelings about that topic or that experience for 15 to 30 minutes, and it turns out to have really powerful effect on relieving you emotionally of the burden of that memory or that experience or that situation. So it's actually a really simple practice And I love that he talked about it in his podcast.
That's really interesting. And he sounds like an amazing educator. I love the, like, the genre, if you will, of scientists or academics doing podcasts about what their field is or like what their passion is, because oftentimes they're such great educators and it's such an accessible way to learn more about this. Whereas like a lot of like in the past, you'd have to like jump through hoops to access any of this information. So that's great to hear. And I feel like we got to know you quite a bit there. So thank you so much for answering my questions. And now we'll move on to the interview part of the recording. And my first question for you is, how would you define personal development?
Oh, that's a big question. Personal development, to me, it's everything. It's you know, the developmental process. I remember when I was in graduate school, one of my professors said to us, place every problem that a client comes into you with in a developmental context, because we're all developing all the time. And if you don't put a problem in context of development, you're not going to know how to help someone make meaning of it or how to overcome it. And so I would say that personal development is that it's placing, taking the context that you're in physically, emotionally, financially, logistically, relationally, all the ways, and just deciding how you want to grow or change and transform, because we're always able to.
Yeah, for sure. We're changing all the time as life experiences happen. We're learning along the way, whether intentional or not. And so what would you say are the main challenges that people face when intentionally pursuing personal development?
I think it's really tempting to give up on ourselves because shame is always right there, you know, yeah, kind of like niggling at us saying, oh, you're failing and you're not good enough and you're not going to be able to do this. And I don't know why that is. I would like an academic to figure that out for us. Why our minds tend to bend toward negativity about ourselves and we're so hard on ourselves. So I think it's kind of giving up too soon. It's believing that because you failed once or because your motivation is low that day or that week, that you can't achieve a goal. But we know motivation waxes and wanes. We know that success comes with failures. We know all these things intellectually, but emotionally, it's so much harder to keep in the game when yeah, we're going through the valleys.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me, I know this is a weird metaphor, but it kind of reminds me of how, like, you know, in school, I'm not sure if school in where you are does this, but there's this like flag raising ceremony every day. It feels like like at the start of the day, you raise the flags. It kind of feels like you're the flag and every, like, you're kind of once in a while or like every now and then you be at the bottom of the pole, and then you kind of have to raise yourself up a bit, like every single day. Maybe not every single day for some people, but you get the idea. It's a weird metaphor, but that's how I imagine like personal development to be.
Oh, I like essentially. That.
Thank you.
I like that because it's an active process. You know, it doesn't just happen automatically.
Yeah, it's also like even well into your 40s, your 50s, your 60s, you're still learning. You know, you don't just develop and you don't just reach the top and just stay there. There are going to be bad days. There are going to be times when you so-called fail. So-called because, like, it doesn't necessarily have to be a failure, but, you know, that's how you see it. So yeah, with respect to nutrition, how would you define it and how do you think it contributes to our personal growth?
Well, nutrition to me isn't all about food. So I like to take kind of an expanded view when I talk about nutrition, I'm not a nutritionist or a dietitian. So the specifics of those macronutrients and things like that, I don't really like to get into because there's people better than me at that. But nutrition to me is when you're giving yourself enough food to nourish yourself, to maintain all your activities and to feel satisfied and to enjoy meals and not to be afraid of foods and to have enough balance and also enough variety so that your gut, you know, we know so much now about our having a healthy gut biome and a rich, diverse biome is so important for mental and physical health. So to me, nutrition is all of those pieces. It's really a lot bigger than just what's in our food.
And what is intuitive eating and how does it contribute to good, healthy nutrition?
So intuitive eating's been around for a while, but I think slowly it's getting more and more into the mainstream. And that's a good thing because there are so many diet fads and food fads. I don't know what it's like in Australia, but certainly in Los Angeles, there's a lot of diets and a lot of dieting, and certainly in the U.S. across the board. And intuitive eating really reminds us that we were born knowing when to eat, when we were full, what we wanted, and, you know, when to stop, when to start eating. And so it's kind of getting back to our roots of like tuning into ourselves and our intuition, going inside of ourselves and not looking outside of ourselves for external rules and guidelines for how to eat and what to eat, but instead, or even when to eat, but instead to look inside of ourselves because the answers really are there. And no one's eating, even no one's healthy eating, is going to look exactly like anyone else's. And that's what's great about intuitive eating. So there's some, I'll just give you a little bit of idea of the principles of intuitive eating. They include things like, there's 10 principles. I won't go over all of them, but it's kind of this idea to honor your hunger, mm-hmm. eat when you're hungry, to honor your fullness, stop eating when you're full. These are just general guidelines. Sometimes we can't eat when we're hungry. We don't stop when we're full, but it's not perfectionistic, this philosophy. To move our bodies, to understand how our emotions affect our eating. And I do a lot of work on that because we don't really learn how to deal with emotions. I don't know in Australia if you do in school, emotional health kind of stuff. We don't really do much here. And so people don't really know what to do with their emotions. And so food is always there as a way to soothe ourselves. And that's okay. But it's helpful if that's just one tool we have and not like our main tool. And also the main tool could also be dieting. And we don't want that to be the main tool either. So knowing your emotions, knowing how to deal with them is really helpful and is part of intuitive eating. And then intuitive eating has this idea of like all foods are equal. And this sounds kind of revolutionary, but like there are no good or bad foods. So we stop labeling foods as good or bad. We say like, oh, this food would give me more energy, or this is something I really like, love the taste of, or this balances out my meal, or I noticed this food keeps me full longer. I taught an intuitive eating class at UCLA. I co-taught it actually with a dietitian. And we had students do this exercise where we'd say, what's a food you crave that you love and you just tend to eat more than you want to of it? Set a day to go eat that food, that snack, whatever. And notice how it tastes, notice how you feel during it and after it, and then come back and talk about it. And it was fascinating because some students would come back and they were like, I love that food as much as I thought I was going to. And then other students would be like, you know, I didn't feel good after I ate it. I ate like a whole bag of chips or whatever, and I felt kind of sick afterwards. I never noticed that before. So it's like intuitive eating is about like actually paying attention to the effect food has on us too, how we feel in our minds and bodies and how our energy level is and stuff like that. So it's like a very practical approach, really. Yeah.
And I imagine that will also kind of lift the guilt from a lot of foods. For example, I personally love potato chips. I love them so much. Just, I know some people who get sick or feel sick from eating them, and that's fine. But I can't deny that I have a fervor for potato chips, okay? It's just that growing up, I was brought up to think they are bad for you. And so every time, every single time I consume them, I feel really guilty about it and then spiral into this like shame and self-loathing, you know, space. And then so it sounds like intuitive eating will kind of soften that guilt. And as time goes by, you'll start to, you also like that just removes any like negative connotation towards the food, and then you can enjoy the food in moderation as well, because you're not going to feel the shame and then be like, well, I need that food again for comfort and to like lessen the guilt, because the guilt's already gone. So that's what it sounds like. I'm getting it right.
Yeah, exactly. And also the idea that if there's a food you feel guilty eating, then you might tell yourself, okay, this is the last time I'm going to have this food. And then what happens if we think it's the last time we're going to get to do something we really enjoy? We want to overdo the thing because we feel like we're not going to give ourselves permission to do it again, whatever it is. And that's the snooze button on the alarm is the same thing. Five more minutes. It's like a few more chips, because tomorrow I'm not going to be able to have more. Sure. You know, if you just sort of legalize all foods and it's like okay to eat chips and apples, like like they're the same, they're neutral. Foods don't have moral value. They don't, you know, then you can just eat them when you want in moderation, like you said, and you don't have to feel guilty, and you also don't have to feel deprived, and then you don't have to kind of eat them in large amounts so that you can then tell yourself you're never going to have them again. Yeah. That's just a cycle.
Intuitive eating, man, it sounds amazing already, because I admittedly have a lot of foods on my list which are stereotypically that like considered, you know, conventionally bad for you, so-called. So this sounds amazing for me, but are there any downsides or challenges to intuitive eating?
I think that there are actually a couple downsides. I would say, first of all, the myths, a couple of myths that I think are important to dispel. The first one is that because it's intuitive, it should be easy. And it actually isn't, because we have so many, like you said, just for you with the potato chips, or I'm this way with ice cream. I love ice cream. I'd like to eat ice cream every day. You don't eat it every day, but I could. But I love it. And I don't feel guilty when I eat it. But I also know that, like, if there's a time and a place, because I need all the foods, right, to feel good. But so the myth is it's easy. And it's not easy because we have all these diet messages that have been around for a long time. And they're so embedded in our culture that we don't even notice them. They're almost invisible, right? And so that's one of the myths. And then one of the other myths that I think is important to dispel is this idea that you just eat whatever you want, whenever you want. And that's not really true either, because if we do that, we're not going to feel good, because we're not listening to our bodies. We're not listening to what our schedule is like on a given day. It might be a day you're going to go for a long run, or it might be a day you're having a meeting during lunch, so you want to bring a snack to work, or like eat a bigger breakfast or whatever. So you do have to pay attention to your day and to nutrition to some degree. So there's this idea of gentle nutrition in intuitive eating. That's like, oh, have I had any vegetables today? Have I had any fruits? Have I had enough protein? Have I had enough carbs? Have I had some fiber? You know, like just kind of a gentle check-in with yourself. No counting, no measuring, nothing like that, but just making sure you're getting kind of all the things your body absolutely needs. So those are kind of some myths. And then I would say the downside is that sometimes people, when they eat intuitively, they neglect some placing some structure around their eating. And I think, like, at least my experience is, and the research does bear this out, that most people do better with some structure. And the reason is probably really honestly because of all the diet culture that's seeped into our minds. And I think if someone like skips lunch, then they, instead of saying like, oh, I'm very hungry at dinner, I'm gonna have a bigger dinner, they tell themselves, oh, I should skip dinner too. look how good I did. I skipped lunch. Oh, I'll see how long I can go without eating. So no structure is a little bit tricky, I think. And I like to add some gentle structure when people are trying to really get their food into a healthy place, because I think then you can plan and prepare and prep better. And your eating just kind of becomes more balanced, and you can see what you like more. And you can also figure out where you're going wrong a little bit better. Whereas if it's too intuitive, obviously, like, there's not really too intuitive, but if it lacks structure completely, it may be kind of tricky to find balance.
That's interesting. Could you give us an example of what a gentle structure looks like?
Well, for recovering from an eating disorder, I'll start there with like the most extreme cases. We usually recommend 3 meals and 3 snacks to most people, because if your body goes too long without food, you might get too hungry and then eat too much for your body's fullness. And also if you eat kind of chaotically throughout the day and just eat whenever you want, then you're never really getting full. You're kind of just getting to neutral all the time. So your body's never really getting to fullness. So you don't really learn to sense the hunger and fullness cues. Whereas if you have like 3 meals and 3 snacks, when you're done with your breakfast, you don't eat again till your snack. And in that time, you should probably get hungry, at least a little bit hungry. And then as people get better, sometimes we'll drop that morning snack. So instead of 3 meals, 3 snacks, we'll have 3 meals, 2 snacks. And then as people even get better from that, we'll say, like, some people don't even want to have a snack anymore. They'll have 3 meals and 1 snack or 1 dessert, and that's okay too. So it's kind of, you start with the most structure to build in the appetite cues, because that's how people get their, it kind of wakes up the body's hunger and fullness cues. And then as someone gets used to those and starts noticing them and responding well to them, then you can kind of take away if somebody would rather not eat that frequently throughout the day. It doesn't really matter. People can eat well in many different ways, but it's just, we start with the most kind of frequency, and then we tell people not to eat in between those meals or snacks, so that they really know there's a start and stop, and they really can, you know, get some hunger going for the next meal.
And are there any tools or resources that you think the audience could refer to learn more about building a structure in intuitive eating and for advice on this matter?
Yes. So Elise Resch and Evelyn Tripoli wrote some books on intuitive eating, and they're amazing. Their workbooks are amazing. There's a book that I just love. It's like, not going to remember the exact title, but it's something like 365 days of intuitive eating, and every day is like a different skill that you build. I love that book because it's just like bite-sized pieces of intuitive eating, and it's very easy to take in, and it kind of challenges your thinking and your actions every day. So that's a nice way to do it. I have a workbook called the Binge Eating Prevention Workbook, and we do a lot of intuitive eating exercises in that book. But there's a lot online if you Google intuitive eating, you can come up with a lot of really good resources.
Amazing. I love a good workbook. It just makes me feel like, I don't know what it is about a workbook. It just makes me feel like there's some structure there. There's some preemptive steps that like I know I can take these steps, and like it's from a professional, and so I trust it. And that sounds like a lot of fun. I don't know if I'm the only one who finds workbooks fun, but sounds great. Thank you so much for answering my questions. Now we'll move on to the practice/habit section. And this is where we ask you about the practical application of what you've just shared with us. My first question for you is, what is a practice that you do to maintain your intuitive eating habits?
Personally, me, or mm-hmm. what
yeah.
other people can
yeah,
do?
Yeah, personally, oh. you. Ah, yeah.
Okay. You know, one thing I do to maintain intuitive eating habits is I like to go to different markets because what I find is that if I go to the same market all the time, I get in a rut with what I'm eating, what I'm cooking, what kinds of foods I'm even considering, consuming. And same with restaurants. I like to try different places because I know our bodies need a lot of diversity. And so I do like to challenge myself, go to different markets, get creative. I have an idea already of which kinds of foods make me feel energized, which ones make me feel comforted, what tastes I like. I already know those things about myself, so I can really be a little bit creative based on that. And also farmers markets, things like that, where I might find a vegetable or fruit or caramel or I don't know, something delicious that I haven't had in a while, you know. And so I can get inspired, let food inspire me, you know.
That's so interesting. I love that practice so much. Are there any challenges to doing this though?
Well, I think it's challenging to find time or make time for going to a different market, especially if you're like you have a busy family life or something like that, and you work a lot. I mean, I do work a lot, but I also am able to make time because I work for myself. I make my own hours, kind of, so I can make time to go to markets and cook and shop and prep food and things like that when I want to. But, you know, also like make it easy. I think one of the keys to intuitive eating is not to overly complicate things. And sometimes you just need to grab an apple and a piece of cheese, you know, or like you said, a bag of chips and a few nuts or something, you know, that's fine. You know, it doesn't have to be so complicated.
Definitely. And I love that you do this practice. It sounds really, really interesting. And I love that you also mentioned making it easy, because sometimes, you know, you think, oh, I've got to get creative with something. And then you tend to just go off on this tangent of like trying to make things as interesting as possible when really just, you know, shake it a bit up. So how do you find the motivation to do it? Like what keeps you motivated to continue doing this on a regular basis?
I know that food plays a big role in our mental and physical health, our longevity, how we feel about ourselves, our energy. And so taking time to be intentional about what I eat, when I eat, how I eat, is really important to me. It is what I do for work too, but that's not really where it comes from. It comes more from just wanting to be intentional in all the parts of my life. And so eating is one of them. And then there's for sure days where I'm not so intentional, but because, you know, you just have to like rush or whatever. Life is moving along. But, but even then, you know, I think you can stock your house with things that, you know, feel pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And based on your experience, do you have any other recommendations of practices or habits that can be combined to improve on this particular experience?
One of the practices I really like that isn't necessarily an intuitive eating practice, but it's a mindfulness-based eating practice, is arriving to a meal or snack and taking, it could even be as little as 10 seconds to just take a breath, check in with your body, what sensations you're feeling. Are you tired? Are you hungry? Are you stressed? And just check in with yourself before you dive into the meal or snack. Because sometimes we conflate what's the sensations happening in our body of fatigue or stress or illness. Mm-hmm. And we think it has to do with hunger or fullness. And so we might not eat enough, or we might eat more than we need, or we might grab the wrong foods for the moment that we're in. So I think just keeping our minds and bodies connected is so important. So doing a little mind-body check right at the beginning of a meal or snack is such a nice way to start out. I would say that's a great practice.
Yeah, that is such a great idea. I feel like that's something I probably would try to adopt as well, because I do have a bad habit of inhaling my food. Like,
then you can inhale it after.
Yeah, I'll inhale it after. But like, realistically, I think that probably will help me slow down a bit and appreciate just the food on its own. Instead of like the food as a distraction from whatever it is going on in life. Thank you so much for answering my questions. Now we're moving on to the open mic section, and this is your opportunity to talk about whatever that you're passionate about. It doesn't have to be related to the topic, but if it is, we welcome that too. So the floor is yours. Take it away.
Can I talk about two things?
Of course, please.
Okay. So the diet pills that are out right now that are everywhere. I assume they're big in Australia too, but in the US they're huge, the Wegovy and Ozempic and all of these. And, you know, these do have a place for people who have certain kind of medical conditions, diabetes, things like that. But they're really being overused. And they have very serious side effects. They cause what's called gastroparesis. They slow down the gastric emptying process, so they slow digestion down and can cause like stomach paralysis and things like that. So they're neither all good nor all bad, like most things. But I just think these get talked about on the news so much, that these weight loss studies and all this stuff. And if we could just stop focusing so much on weight and focus more on just eating well and balanced and having gentle nutrition and eating what we like, paying attention to our body cues, we wouldn't need these medicines. And we don't need them anyway. You know, we put so much emphasis on weight. I assume that is the same in Australia. I think culturally we have like a lot of commonality, especially with Los Angeles and Australia. Yeah. And so I think if we could take the focus off weight and put it back on just healthy living, intentional living, and, you know, planning meals, planning snacks, having diversity in our foods and things like that, then we can stop over focusing on weight per se. And maybe people wouldn't be reaching for these medications. So I'm just worried about what the long-term effect of these is going to be physically for the people taking them. I'm also worried, a client said to me, I don't think this client would mind me repeating this, said to me the other day, you know, it's really hard because all my friends are taking Ozempic. Now, I know this person's friends, they're not like people who have like diabetes or some kind of a medical problem. They wouldn't even be considered in a high BMI.
They're not people who need.
They're not in large bodies. Yeah. I mean, even people in larger bodies I don't think should be taking Ozempic or those drugs, but maybe there would be a case or two where they could benefit from them and it would be worth the risks. But these are just people who are within average size. And so they're being prescribed to people. And this client was saying, like, everybody's getting so thin around me. And it's really hard. It's really hard not to start taking something like this. And so it's scary how much of a psychological, how much psychological fallout there is going to be from these. We already have diet culture. We have intermittent fasting and keto and this and that and all the things. But now we have these like kind of miracle weight loss medicines that almost anybody seems to be able to get. So though I just wanted to say a little bit about that. I understand that it's complicated, and I understand that there's a lot of bias for people in larger bodies, and a lot of medical providers will say that health and weight are related more than they are. So I can see why people are led to take them, but I hope that either the medications really, really, really improve and don't cause so much risk, or this is also a fad, because it's worrisome. And I think we're gonna have a lot more eating disorders and problems with eating disorders as a result of them.
It also sounds like an issue that is far beyond like the individual reach or like the individual's problems. So what do you think we can do as a society to move forward from this, be it like in terms of education or like cultural?
Well, I think so many people have dieted, and it's really helpful to explain to people who have dieted that in the aftermath of a diet, your hunger hormone actually increases more than somebody who's never dieted. So you're actually hungrier than people who have never dieted after you've dieted. And your fullness hormone goes down. So you're hungrier than people who haven't dieted, and it takes more food to get you full. And so there is a biological component that makes post-diet aftermath very complicated. But I still think there's a way to work with your own body that is natural and brings you back to natural eating without using medication to do it, if you understand that that's what's happening and that it's going to take time, because we're really wired for survival. Humans are wired for survival. And so when we diet, our survival instinct kicks in and we want to eat more, and our fullness hormone goes down, so we do eat more. And that's why so many people gain weight after they've dieted, because of these biological changes and the psychological changes. So I'm all about give people the facts, empower people with what's really happening in their bodies, and use what we're wired, your own wiring to recover, instead of using a drug that has all these negative side effects. Use your wiring. And also, because we know about the brain now, that neuroplasticity, we know that we can always learn new things, use that to your advantage. So there's all this wiring going on inside of us that's really, really just awesome, like completely awesome. And the more we know, the more we can tap into that. I like intuitive eating because it does tap into that, but I think there's even more than that to tap into.
That is so well put. Thank you so much, Gia, for outlining that for us and for going into such detail and speaking so passionately about this. If our listeners want to find out more about you and what you do, where can they go?
I have a website. It's I have two websites. One is Eating is Natural. So that is my new motto, is that eating is natural. Eating is natural. We are born eating. We wouldn't survive without eating. It is natural. We've gotten so afraid of food, and we have all this fear tactics about don't eat this and don't do that and da, da, da. But really, eating is natural. Get back to that. So I have Eating is Natural, and then drgiamarson.com. So You can find me there and also on some social media.
I love that. Eating is Natural and drgiamarsin.com. We'll link those in the show notes. Thank you everyone for tuning in and see you in the next episode.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to be here.
You've been listening to the Self-Improvement Atlas, the Personal Science Insights podcast produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. For more episodes like these from 10 different life management perspectives, search LMSL on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you can get updated on everything we have to offer. We have a wide range of topics readily available for you to check out. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating our show, sharing it, and subscribing to our channel as it helps us grow and bring you more quality resources. More of our work can be found on our website at pe.lmsl.net, where you can join our movement. I'm Marie Stella. Thanks for tuning in.